Oh, good. And this young lady, we were just talking one day, kind of like I was with you, Phyllis Dumont. And she said something, and I said, that sounds like a Wednesday talk. I have the slightest idea what it was now, but she said, okay. She agreed with me that she would come in and share those thoughts. So I'm eager to hear what it is that I thought at one time was a good thought. Don't ask everybody what my name is, but if I do come around and say, what's my name, please remember it for me. Those two little faces looking over there is the cutest thing. He's going, I don't know what this is all about, but I know it's interesting. But anyhow, tonight we get the fun of hearing what those thoughts were that I thought was interesting at the time I thought they were interesting from Kathy Scalecki.
That's my name.
Kathy Scalecki?
Yes, Kathy Scalecki. I wanted Millie to remember my name, so I kept saying, it's Kathy. Kathy with a K. So now I'm Kathy with a K.
That's how I remembered it.
It works. Well, I'm really excited to share with you all what Millie and I talked about briefly. To use that every now and then. I'm trying something new tonight. I know what I want to say, so I didn't write anything down. I'm just going to wing it, speak from my heart. So what I want to talk about tonight is the healing that I experienced in Reverend Millie's classes. What I mentioned was there were a few people in class who were kind of new, and they were having some really cool healing experiences, healing touch-ins from the other side. And I wanted to assure them that if they stick around, it will continue, and the healing is amazing. So I want to kind of share my story along those lines so you have a sense of just how miraculous and healing and powerful classes are here with Reverend Millie and with loved ones coming in from the other side. So to give you an idea of that, when I was a kid, I was just so shy. I was so shy and so filled with fear and anxiety. I wrote my story down in my book, Waking Up Sober in a Convent, but I didn't put this part in it. You guys are my spiritual family, so you get to hear all the kind of stuff that didn't fit with the storyline very well, you know? And what I experienced was, as a baby, my parents were building our house. And, you know, they'd be built up on scaffolds, hammering and painting and doing all this stuff. And I'd be crying as an infant, and they knew that I had been fed. It could have been a dirty diaper, who knows? But they couldn't just stop and pick me up. So I think that kind of spun me off to feeling lonely and kind of like unloved, you know, like what's wrong? And just extremely shy. I was afraid of my dad. I was afraid of my grandparents. I'd hide behind my mom. And I developed this phobia of public toilets because they flushed so loud. You know, it's like I was still 12, 13 years old dragging my sisters into the public stall with me because I was afraid to be backing up into this toilet. I mean, the anxiety of just that, you know, that loud flush. And it wasn't until years later when I was in therapy that there was a name for it. It was called free-floating anxiety. And I had no idea. And what was happening was I was afraid of my dad. He was this big man with this booming voice. And he could get pretty angry, he could have a temper, but even if he was just talking in his big, booming male voice, as a little kid, that's kind of scary. And it wasn't socially acceptable to be afraid of your dad, you know? So I guess I subconsciously attached my fear to this inanimate object. And so it wasn't until I got into some counseling that I started to uncover all these fearful thoughts and all this anxiety. Where is it coming from? How do I heal this? My journey, I come from an alcoholic family, and I didn't realize that until I left home, went to the convent, really wanted to be a sister to all my brothers and sisters and serve God in that way. And I was in the convent for about a year and a half when I started to realize that my family was alcoholic and that maybe I had an issue with alcohol too. And the sisters were terrific. They put me through treatment. They helped me. They gave me books to read. And eventually they let me get involved in counseling. And the two therapists that I had were just so amazing. They were the moms that I wish my mom would have been for me. And I love my mom dearly, but my mom didn't have the tools that she needed because she didn't get it from her parents either. And that's what happens with, you know, alcoholism, dysfunctional families. People grow up without the tools. So I remember sitting in therapy so many times saying, how does this work? How do you do life? I don't get it. And I didn't know what I didn't know. You know, I didn't even know what questions to ask. I just didn't know. I didn't know how to communicate in relationships. I didn't know how to allow myself to have my feelings. I didn't know what I needed or what I wanted, much less speak up and ask you for what I needed, you know? So it was a journey of self-discovery. And, you know, I'd go to AA meetings and ACA, Adult Children of Alcoholics meetings, and my therapist would encourage me, you got to share, you got to speak up. And it's like, there was ACA was really new at that time, and the rooms were huge, 50 to 100 people in a meeting. And it was voluntary sharing, so you had to raise your hand and be called on. And it felt like my hand weighed a ton to be able to lift it and say, you know, I have something to say. I didn't even know what I wanted to say. And so my therapist, she was a recovering ACA, and she went to meetings, and she said, just put your hand up there and say, my therapist told me to share. So I did. My therapist told me to share, and I'm really nervous, and my heart's beating a mile a minute, and I don't know what I'm going to say. And I saw people nodding, like, oh, wow, okay, they relate already. This is cool. And so then I think of more to say, and I think of more to say. And then after the meeting, people would come up to me and say, gosh, you said exactly how I'm feeling. And it was like my isolation, the walls started coming down, and I could relate to people, and I started to connect. And over a period of many years between 12-step meetings, counseling, and making friends with people in those meetings, my walls started coming down, and I started to find out who the heck Kathy is, and what do I like, and what do I think, and how am I feeling, and it was like an amazing journey. So it was very powerful. Now, fast forward 20-some-odd years, 20, 30 years or so, I'll say 20 years, and I find this church 6 years ago. And I keep hearing about Reverend Millie's classes. They're 3 hours long. And I'm like, what do they do for 3 hours? So I come for choir practice on Tuesday night from 5 to 7, and Reverend Millie would wander in and get ready for class, and she's like, stay if your heart feels like it. And I'm like, kept hearing 3 hours long, I don't think so. But then I started hearing what was happening in the classes. I heard about circles, I heard about healing, I heard about loved ones coming in, and I really got curious. It's like, ooh, what is this all about? So the classes go from October and finish up the following June or so, the beginning part of June, and in the spring, they're opened up for guests to come and check it out, visitors to come in. That way the class participants can practice their attunement on someone they don't know. So I go to my very first class, and I got to watch as a couple of circles unfolded, and it was like really cool. And being raised Catholic, I mean, I was open to this. I mean, I believe in angels. I believe that we can, our loved ones are looking in on us, and they love us, and they're always with us. So I was very, very open and comfortable with what I was seeing happen. And then at the last circle, Reverend Millie says, okay, Kathy, come on up. We're going to practice on you. I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. What's going to happen? Some of you know Spencer. Spencer was there. My buddy George was there. And as the circle just starts to unfold, Spencer says, you feel guilty about leaving the Catholic Church. And I thought, oh, I don't feel guilty. I did that years ago. I'm fine with it. But all of a sudden, I'm crying. I'm like, oh, my God, I guess I do feel guilty. And then different people, priests came in, my pastor. Someone said, there's a man here who's really tall, and that was Monsignor Heidi. He was really tall. And he's the my pastor who I met with before I entered the convent to kind of prepare, kind of talk about my spiritual journey and all that kind of stuff. And then nuns came in from the community that I was in. I don't even know who crossed over on the other side at this time during the class, but all these people, and it was just such an amazing healing experience. So I was hooked. I'm like, okay, I'm going to take class in October. I'm going to do this. And I wound up taking classes for 3 years. And during that time, just my dad passed away about, 2003. So it'll be 10 years this Valentine's Day. And he touched in so many times with just this unconditional love and acceptance. And I got to tell you, I'm gay, in case you don't know. And when I came out to my parents, oh, my, it hurt them so bad. And I knew it would hurt them because based on their belief system, they didn't have a frame of reference for this. You know, being very Catholic and, you know, if it doesn't come from the Pope's mouth, God didn't say it, that kind of Catholic. And my dad had a really hard time, but luckily we made some peace before he passed. But for him to touch in class with this just unconditional love and acceptance, it was just so healing. And my dad was, you know, kind of, if you couldn't figure this out yet, by the rules, you know, by the book, you know, if it's got to be, you got to follow the rules. That's his only frame of reference. You had to do things by the book. So he was the perfect, you know, tried to be the perfect dad. He tried to be the perfect pro-life coordinator for our little town. He tried to be the perfect commentator on Sunday Mass, perfect husband, just perfect role model. And for him to say he wished he wouldn't have taken his life so seriously, he wished he wouldn't have lived so rigidly by all these rules, and he wished he would have been freer to be guided by his heart, you know? To hear things like that, it was just so lifting. I didn't realize how growing up in the family I did, dealing with the issues I dealt with, especially being gay, I felt like a second-class citizen, and I thought I had really healed and grown a lot. But by comparison, when I started classes, and then 3 years later, I just felt so much lighter, just from the many experiences that happened in class. A couple years, I guess it was my second year in class, I went to see the movie Milk with Carrie one night. About Harvey Milk. I don't know how many have seen that movie. And I had seen the documentary of Harvey Milk's life shortly after I came out, kind of filling myself in on gay history and gay rights and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, knowing what I know now about, you know, attracting what you want into your life, staying positive, you know, like Reverend Mother Teresa would say, I won't go to a war protest, but I'll go to a march for peace. You know, I was like sorting out all this stuff, you know, this whole thing with, you know, gay rights and marriage and all this. What kind of a role should we take? What would Harvey Milk say now from the other side? I was really curious. I really wanted him to pop into class. So I asked Harvey Milk to come into class and after I saw the movie. And I go into class, and you know how Reverend Millie will get an image that the angels give her to start a circle, and she got dog poo.
I totally remember that.
You were there, yes. So I had two dogs at the time. I'm always picking up dog poo. So I went up to the circle with several others, and as the circle progressed, it became apparent that someone was coming to visit for me, and I still didn't make the connection with Harvey Milk, but I was still hoping Harvey would come in. And it turns out my dad came in with another message of unconditional love and acceptance. And, you know, I don't mean to trivialize it. You know, it was very powerful. I can't tell you how many tears I've shed in those classes that just helped me to just get lighter and lighter and heal those wounds and get lighter and lighter. So it wasn't until after the class that, I don't know if you guys can get this, but I just think it's really humorous that my dad would want to say hello to me using a symbol from Harvey Milk's movie. Don't you think that's kind of cool?
Yeah.
Like another level of he knows what's going on with me. He knew I saw the movie. He knew how important it was, and he used that to get his message through. I thought that was really cool. So, I feel closer to my dad now that he's on the other side than I did when he was walking the earth. So, spiritualism, the classes, if you haven't taken advantage of the classes, I'd really encourage you to drop in, check with Reverend Millie at a time. But in the spring, it'll open up to visitors, and you can experience what it's all like. One other experience I'd like to share is I went to a Thursday night class to visit one night just to see what that was like, because I was a Tuesday night person. Now I'm a Tuesday afternoon person. So I went to Thursday night. I knew some people, but I didn't know everyone, and I somehow got into the center of the circle again, and someone got the image of a marathon. So, the classes are there to help you develop your attunement, your ability to hear from the other side, your angels, your guides, your loved ones, whoever, and just to kind of give you feedback of what it could look like. So someone gave me, they got marathon. They're like, I get marathon, or are you a marathon runner? Do you run? What is this? I'm like, nah, I'm not really a runner. Can't say I'm a runner because my body can't handle it. So I could have easily just discarded it, Yeah, you're off. But I kind of sat with it a little bit, and someone else came up to me after class, and they said, that marathon thing, it's like you're running. You're always running, looking for someone, something. And honestly, I was single, and I was still looking for a good mate. So I'm like, is she out there somewhere? And the person said, right here. You just need to be right here. And I got it. It's like I did feel like I was running a marathon. I felt like I was like, where is she? When is my life going to take off? When, looking out there. It was like I needed that message. It's all right here. Just stop and just be here now. So if you get a message that doesn't quite fit, sit with it a little bit. Sometimes it's very symbolic. I'd like to close with a song I wrote a couple years back, and I use the expression from the 23rd Psalm. Your rod, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure some of you have heard that whole thing about, spare the rod, spoil the child. So we get this image of the rod being like to beat up somebody or something. And I discovered an explanation of the 23rd Psalm where they talked about what it's like to be a shepherd taking care of the sheep. And if if you're walking along a narrow trail and the sheep missteps and falls down into the trail below, what the shepherd will do is take his big long shepherd's hook and reach over and pull the lamb back up into safety. And it's like, oh. So the rod is there as guidance. It's there as a safety net. It's very loving. It's not there to, whip you into shape or anything like that. So I found that very comforting. So I'd like to share this with you. No, that's okay. I've been practicing. I don't do this song very often because it has a picking pattern that I need to do for it to sound good. And when I get nervous, I don't pick very well. And, so this is practice for me to play this for you guys. And then just one other thing. I do have books available if anyone's interested. And it's my spiritual journey. And most of you know this story. You get a spirit guide in your first year of class with Reverend Millie. She's able to give you your spirit guide. And mine is Flying Dove. And part of what Flying Dove said to me basically was, we want to help you write your spiritual story, your God story, if you want to. And I thought, okay, I'm open if you'll help me. It took a few years, but we finally got it down. And it feels really exciting to share my story with you all and with whoever comes across it, basically. So this is called You Are My All, You Are My God. I wrote it after a breakup, and then I quickly fell in love with someone else. So I experienced the downs and then the ups, and then that didn't last. Usually it doesn't last when it's that quick, so there were downs after that. But You give me hope when I've just about given up. You give me joy to fill my empty cup. You give me love to heal my broken heart.
What you call sweetness and light, isn't it? Everyone fell in love with her. I know you did. Isn't that grand? She didn't mention her book, because I thought she was gone too, because each time she's had a chance, she kind of mentions it. But she didn't tonight, so guess what? I'm going to mention it. It's Waking Up Sober in a Convent. I'll hold it up, honey, so they can see it. And if you twist your arm, I bet you could get a book from her, and you could probably get her to sign it. What do you think? Yeah, that's our Kathy. Sweet little girl here, isn't she? I'm glad we found her. So glad we found you, Kathy.